Welcome to Accessibility Craft, where we explore the complex challenges and emerging trends that are shaping digital accessibility while sipping on unique craft beverages. This show is proudly produced by Equalize Digital, the most trusted name in WordPress accessibility. Join us every week as we break down accessibility news and share the expert strategies we've used to help make millions of websites more accessible. Grab a drink. The show starts now.
Welcome to WordPress Accessibility Meetup from Inaccessible to Inclusive, a practical PDF remediation demo with Samantha Merritt, Senior Accessibility Specialist at the Ministry of Justice in the UK. I want to shout out our sponsor for live captioning today, and that is GoDaddy. GoDaddy's mission is to empower a worldwide community of entrepreneurs by giving them all the help and tools they need to grow online, including a simpler, safer WordPress experience. GoDaddy provides a managed WordPress experience that is as easy as it is effective. The latest version of WordPress comes pre-installed with exclusive themes, plugins, and tools to get you up and running quickly with automated backups, updates, and malware removal so that their pros can spend less time on monotonous maintenance and more time building their businesses. You can learn more about GoDaddy if you go to GoDaddy.com. I always ask if you are willing, on whatever social media platform you are on, to give them a quick shout out or go comment on their page and say thank you for supporting the cost of captioning at WordPress Accessibility Meetup. That helps to encourage them to continue covering this and sponsoring it so we can make these meetups accessible to everyone. Mark your calendars for some upcoming events. I am very excited to introduce today's speaker, Samantha Merritt. Samantha has spoken for us previously and did a phenomenal job, and everyone asked, can she come back and talk more about PDF accessibility? And we are just so pleased to have her back. Samantha is a senior accessibility specialist at the Ministry of Justice, where she leads strategic initiatives to embed accessibility across digital services. With over 7 years of experience championing accessible documents and inclusive design, Samantha has developed cross-government training programs, created hands-on learning spaces like the MOJ Accessibility Bar, and co-organizes the Document Accessibility Community of Practice, a network spanning 65-plus public sector organizations. So I am so excited to welcome her today. I'm going to stop sharing and let Samantha take over. We will be using the Q&A panel, and I will come back at the end to pass along any questions for her. So if you have questions, because we do have a lot of people here today, it is helpful for me if you could please put those in the Q&A section. So thanks so much, Samantha. I'll let you take it away.
Thank you very much. And hello, everybody. Welcome wherever you are in the world, whether it's morning or afternoon. A good day to you. So thank you for joining today. As Amber said, we are going to be talking about PDF accessibility today. I love when I came, I just talked about documents more generally, but there was obviously a real feeling in the room, the virtual room, that PDFs were a problem that people were looking to solve. So I said I'd come back and talk about how we can help try and solve that problem maybe today. So I'm going to talk about sort of a problem document, which in this case is a PDF, and we're going to try and work to make it a usable PDF. I'm going to walk you through some of the things that you should be doing to try and make sure that your PDFs are as accessible as they can be. I don't think I need to add too much more because Anne did a really, really lovely introduction for me. But just as a visual description for everybody on the call, I'm a woman in her 20s. I'm wearing a pair of glasses. I've got blonde hair, which is in a bun today. There's a picture on the slide of me hugging my beautiful pet dog, Bella. She's a big dog. It's a big cuddle. She's a blue Staffordshire Bull Terrier, and she's got her paws on my shoulders. You will learn throughout this presentation that I'm a big fan of dogs, and I do litter them out throughout the presentation just to try and keep it as fun as possible because we are talking about PDF accessibility, which at times can feel a little deep, but we will try and keep it engaging and kind of work with you guys to understand some of these concepts. I will visually describe everything I have on my slides. I've included some screenshots to talk through how we do things and where you can find certain tools but I will absolutely describe where those things are and tell you what menus, etc., they live in, so that everybody can understand where we're at. So I'm going to cover as much as I can in the time we have, but I also don't want to overwhelm everybody and just basically talk at you for, say, 50 minutes and you go away thinking that was all great, but I don't even know where to start. So we're going to break it down into different sections. We're going to talk about why PDFs are maybe misunderstood to start with. Then I'm going to talk about, should it even be a PDF? And maybe consider that question before we even delve into remediation. And then we will dive straight in and have a look at some of the accessibility fixes. We'll talk about what makes up a PDF. How do you tag it properly? What are those tags? How do you remediate some of those issues that sometimes pop up and people say, I don't know what that means, what's gone wrong? And hopefully we can dig into that a little bit. So hopefully you will leave the session today thinking, I've got a few top tips I can take away and look at some of my PDF documents maybe and see if you can make some changes to improve them. So before we start, let's just define, when we're saying PDF over and over again, what is that and how do we often use it? So on this slide, I've got my first dog picture. So a brindle looking dog looking at the camera with one ear poking up as if he's looking for an answer to the question. But quite simply, a PDF document stands for Portable Document Format. It was a universal digital file format developed in about 1993. It displays documents in a very fixed layout. So the purpose of it is that documents look the same across any operating system and any device. And that was kind of why they were created in the first place, to ensure there was that consistency. And they were kind of locked in time to ensure they couldn't be changed, regardless of how that user might be kind of looking or understanding that information. I think from my experience working in the UK government, there has been a lot of misunderstandings and some kind of myths, I guess, that have developed over time. PDFs very much have been the kind of normal style of creating documentation in government. Everything is a PDF document. Every policy we create, every letter we send out, everything we publish on our websites tends to be, or at least in the last, I think we've seen a shift in the last 5 years, but before that, it was always PDFs as the default. And then some of the things where I talk to people about, we could make this PDF accessible. People often say, no, PDFs that you don't understand, they can't be accessible. PDFs never work with screen readers, so there's no point even trying, they just don't work. Don't worry, it passes the checker, so it's accessible. So I've done kind of what I need to do. And then people say, I've converted it from Word or a Word document. So it's automatically accessible, isn't it? Because it just carries over all the things I've done in Word to make it accessible. Some of these are partially true. So for example, if you are converting a Word document to a PDF and you have put things like alternative text in your Word document and you've put your headings in right, some of that will carry over when you convert it to a PDF. That much is true. But it doesn't make your PDF document automatically accessible and ready to publish. I wish that was true. It would make, I'm sure, some editors' lives a lot easier. But unfortunately, there's always some manual checking you need to do when you do that conversion process to make sure it works correctly. PDFs can be accessible. Hopefully, I'm going to prove that to you today. And PDFs can work with screen readers, of course, if they are accessible. And as with all automated checkers, we cannot rely on them to give us a comprehensive compliance check when it comes to accessibility. So the Acrobat, for example, in Adobe Acrobat, it's a great checker, checks for a lot of things. It can really flag some important things, but it's not going to tell you everything. So again, you need to do some manual checking and some manual remediation to make sure you're taking all the boxes. So before I start fixing PDFs, one of the questions I ask my editors or people that are providing the information to me is, should this even be a PDF? And I tend to walk them through quite a simple decision tree. So I ask them, does it need to be printed? Is the layout that you've got there, is that preservation critical? Do you have to have it in that format, or it might be breaking some kind of legislation, for example? Have you considered any other format? So could this be an HTML document? Could you leave it in the original file format and not convert it to PDF? And would a Word document or similar meet the same need? I like to try and understand who I'm talking to in terms of the users we're creating this for and how they're going to use that, because that will determine whether or not we think we should be using a PDF document. So we'll try and break it down. The simple reason I ask these questions is because PDF accessibility is quite complex. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say it isn't, but there's quite a lot to a PDF document. It doesn't mean that it's impossible to do, but before we kind of go down that road and spend a lot of time doing it, I always just like to make sure we're doing it for the right reasons. And could we be spending that time making a Word document accessible that will still meet the same need for the users?
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
So often with teams, I say actually the most accessible PDF is often no PDF at all. But as with lots of things, most of the time the answer is yes, we do need a PDF. We need it tomorrow. What can we do? So within government, we tend to use Adobe Acrobat Pro to make our PDFs accessible. So just to be aware for everybody, that the licensed version of that software, and if you don't have a license for that particular piece of software, then the accessibility tools and some of the other tools I'm going to talk about today are not available in it. That does not mean that Adobe Acrobat is the only thing you can use. That's what we tend to use in UK government for doing ours. It's what a lot of my guidance and screenshots will be based on today, but it doesn't necessarily mean you have to use that. There are other softwares available, things that I haven't personally used, so I can't give you any recommendations on which one can do what, but I am aware there are others out there, things like Common Look PDF, Equidocs, Access PDF, Pave, PDF Accessibility Viewer, are other things I'm aware that exist that you can, again, they're kind of free web-based tools, some of them, that you could do some accessibility work in. As I say, I'm talking today very much from using what's available within Adobe Acrobat Pro, but I do know there are sort of similar tools and they do similar things in other versions of software as well. I only bring this up because I often work with colleagues who are like, I can't find the accessibility toolbar in my software. And it's because they're in Adobe Acrobat Reader. It just doesn't have that functionality. So you do need the pro version to do some of this stuff. And whenever I'm working with someone and we know we're going to be working on an accessible document, we always start with the source document, which I'm sure anybody who's worked in accessibility before or knows anything about this space will have probably heard this in various other contexts before. The source document is always the best place to start. On the slide, there's an image of sort of a terrier-looking dog wearing a trench coat with leather gloves and holding a magnifying glass. I like looking quite deeply at my source document before I get to the PDF stage. It's much easier to fix accessibility issues at that kind of, you could say source document level or maybe a template level if you're working through like corporate templates, for example. Most applications provide options for making your source document accessible. And the more accessibility work you can do there, the better. For every accessibility issue that remains in your source document, it's likely to be multiplied when you convert it to PDF. So for example, if you have no headings in your Word document, it's likely to bring all your other headings out of order when you convert it to PDF. It might not detect them properly, and then you might end up with more headings out of order than you originally planned for. It's also important that you follow the correct procedure when you're converting your document to a PDF. I'm not going to advise today that you convert PowerPoint presentations to PDFs. I personally don't like that. I find it very, very difficult to make that final output accessible. I always encourage people, if you're going to convert to PDF, most of the time, make sure it's from a Word document or some kind of word processing document. It's the easiest way to make a PDF document. Any other kind of document type can get a little bit messy when it comes to making it accessible. And the good thing is a lot of the word processing software has all the features you need to make sure that that source document is accessible as it can be. And I'm sure you've been to webinars before where they've told you about adding alternative text, making sure your link text is good, adding in proper heading orders. All of those things are absolutely brilliant when it comes to making sure your PDF is accessible as it can be. When you are converting to PDF, make sure you do not click the print to PDF option. There's on this slide, there's a picture of a small dog looking shocked, holding its paws up to its ears and the words, "Oh no," written at the bottom. The amount of times I will work with colleagues who, with all good intentions, I'm like, "Oh, I've got my PDF ready." I open it and there are no accessibility tools or tagging in there whatsoever. They've simply printed it to PDF, which means everything they've done in their Word document, for example, is not carried over to the PDF version. So if you're going to do anything, always make sure you do a file and a save as. Make sure you're saving it as a PDF. Make sure you're turning on the accessibility features and tagging when you're in your saving options, which you'll see when you're saving it from any word processing software, so that you're carrying over all that hard work that you spent all that time doing in your Word document into your PDF. Also helps you when you get to PDF, you're already halfway there. So just remember that when you're converting from your source document. So what actually makes a PDF accessible? Well, lots of things make a PDF accessible, but a PDF should have searchable text. So I should be able to scan it like I could do any other document and find things in that PDF. Fonts should have been used. So accessible fonts should be used so that I can extract characters from it and that it can be read and understood by technology. Probably quite important. Most important in this list, arguably, is structure and tags. So PDF should have tags so that it can be read and understood by assistive technology. It should have a really good clear reading order. So the reading order should be nice and clear and logical. Of course, that's down to you as an editor to determine what that logic order looks like, but it definitely should have good reading order. And as with all accessible content, regardless of where you're doing it, all image content, of course, should have alternative text, just like in any other application you're working in. So, starting off, before we even open up our PDF and start worrying about accessibility, let's set up our workspace to make sure that we're ready to do this work. So in order to do some accessibility work in Acrobat, you need to have sort of certain sections of the interface visible to you or available to use. Now, if you've never used Acrobat before, or you've never used the accessibility tools before, it's highly likely they're not going to be there by default. So you're going to have to go and find them and add them to your toolbar. The first thing I would say you do is you add the accessibility tools. Normally they sit on the right-hand side of your screen if you're looking at it, or they're in the toolbar on the right-hand side of your screen. So there's two ways you can find it. Either from tools, which will be at the top of the screen in the menu bar, or more tools in the tools pane. So wherever it is you decide to find it, it's normally, if you're looking at it visually, a sort of purple icon, kind of the established accessibility icon, a person inside a purple circle. That's the accessibility tools. If you find that, you could add it to your toolbar. There's a quick add button on the bottom, the screenshot on the side. I'm in tools. I found accessibility and I just click add. Once I've added it to my tools, it will be there forevermore. I don't have to do that every single time I open Acrobat, but the first time I do it and I want to add it to my toolbar, it's quite important I make sure I can easily access it rather than having to always go to the tools menu every single time to go and find it. Accessibility is, of course, very important, but there are also other things you might want to add to your accessibility toolbar to make sure all the options are available. So normally by default, things like bookmarking, tags probably are going to be there, and like attachments and things like that. But there are certain sort of tools within accessibility that might not be there by default. So I would say some of the more important ones to make sure you've added are the content option, the order option, and of course the tags pane. If you open up your accessibility tools and any of those are not there, you can choose your navigation pane and then go to view, show, hide. And in your navigation pane, there'll be a list of all the things you can add, and you can just add or remove whatever it is you want to add and remove. As I say, for me, content, order, and tags would be my top three that I'd put in there straight away. Bookmarks are also very helpful to have in there. Everything else, I would say you can leave out for now and just keep your pane nice and simple if you'd like to. But again, it's just to show that some of these navigation panes are set up in different ways in different people's Adobe Acrobat. So if you want to set it up for your own needs, feel free, but you do it view via the view, show, hide, and then choose your options in the navigation pane. And once you set up your Acrobat, you're kind of ready to get to work and start doing some remediation fixes. There are kind of two things to kind of do first off the back before you even start with the contents of the document itself. And again, these two are no in the other document type, but people often forget this when they're doing it in PDF format. So when accessing a document, the first thing people come across is the file name. So it's really, really important that we make the file name unique and descriptive, because it helps people understand what that document is about and whether they're opening maybe the one that they thought they were opening, if they're opening it from a web page, for example. So as I say, this is no different if you're doing it in Word or PowerPoint. We would give the same advice. Normally, assistive tech will read the file name when the document is accessed. So we tend to keep the file name and the document title quite similar. They're normally related, but not exactly the same. But it depends on the context. If the file name and the title are the same, sometimes it might lead to a little bit of confusion, but it's the end of the world. When you are adding a title or at your file name, you change the title using the document properties menu. So you normally find it under file. You'll see document properties, and once the dialog box opens up, the first box on the description tab should say title, and you can type into that box whatever it is you think is suitable. You can also add an author. Now that's up to you as the editor, whether you think that's helpful. We at the Ministry of Justice, for example, would normally just put in Ministry of Justice. We don't put people's names in, or we don't put specific team names in, because for most people in the general public, that doesn't mean anything to them anyway. They'd just like to know the documents owned by the Ministry of Justice. In a similar thing, document title is also very important. So under initial view, the initial view tab within your document properties, it will show you the document title. This might be different to the file name, so just bear that in mind. The purpose of this technique is to show how a descriptive title for a PDF document can be sort of specified for assistive technology. Document titles identify normally the current location without users having to kind of actually read the page content itself. So again, just make sure that they match, or at least they're similar, so that people know they're opening the right document in the right space. That's the simple bit, right? Setting your file name, making sure your document title are correct. The next thing about PDF documents are tags. If you're a web developer, or you've really kind of done any of that work in the past, you might already be familiar with tags in some context, because they're kind of the basis, they're similar to the basis for HTML code. A tag basically tells, in HTML language, the browser or a screen reader what type of content something is. So most text is tagged as a paragraph, so that has a P tag. The main heading on a page is tagged with a H1, a heading one tag, and then subheadings could be H2 and so on. So very similar to how you might put headings into a Word document, the tagging system is very, very similar. In a PDF, tags perform a very, very similar role, except that they don't actually affect the content on the page. So on a web page, if tagged content is missing, it will not display. Whereas in a PDF, it will still be there, but screen readers, for example, might miss that content or not be able to access it. So actually, tags are pretty critical to PDF accessibility, because anything without a tag get missed completely by assistive technology users. So it's really, really important that things are tagged. And of course, it's important they're tagged correctly. So the first thing you need to do before you can create any tags is to create what they call a tags root. Now you'll notice a theme with kind of trees, because they often call this the tag tree. So your tag tree needs a tag root to grow, right? I didn't choose that language. That's been chosen for me, but it kind of makes sense. I can see the logic. So I've got three small screenshots on this slide. The first shows the tags pane with a message that says no tags available. So that means I need to create a tags root, because at the moment I've got no tags and I've got no tags root to grow any tags from. The second screenshot shows what where you can do this. So in the tags pane, you select the options and there's a drop down, and then you select create tags root. The third screenshot then shows the outcome of that when there are no tags available, but I now have a tags root at the top. So I've started kind of my tree. I've got my basis where all my tags are going to grow later on. Now, if you are starting from scratch with the mediation, you might have to do this. However, if you have converted from any other source file, it is more than likely this will already be there for you. This is just for people who open up a PDF and their tags pane is completely blank. Just remember, before you start adding tags in and kind of selecting text, you need to make sure you've got a tags root to start with. Now, I've said there are many different types of tag. These are kind of the main ones. So paragraph, as I've said, the P tag, that's just for normal text. The H1 and your H2, they are heading level ones and twos. We're quite familiar with those with kind of heading orders in other context. Your figure tag, that's obviously for images. Your L tag is for lists, an ordered or unordered list. Your LI tag is your list item. So that has to be embedded within an L tag. So again, we will talk about that relationship in a second. And you also have a link tag, which is for hyperlinks. And they are normally embedded within a P tag, because normally your link text is in a sentence, for example. So your link tag kind of goes in with that P tag. There are other tags, of course. So you've got table tags. We're going to talk about those separately, because there's a bit of a hierarchy with those and how you have to order them. So we'll talk about that in the next couple of slides. But hopefully you could kind of see how everything in a PDF gets allocated some kind of tag, depending on what it is. Now you might be thinking, this all sounds like a lot of work at the moment and it's all a bit complex. There are features that allow you to do things like auto tagging. So if you do in Adobe, for example, Acrobat kind of like looks at your layout, looks at your structure, looks at your content, and then determines whether or not it can be read. And then it will auto tag things depending on what it thinks you've got in your document. There, just to sort of flag, it will not produce an instantly accessible PDF on its own. It's a kind of one and done solution. So sometimes I might auto tag to get me halfway there, and then I'll go in and manually remediate everything else. Sometimes I auto tag and it basically, if it hasn't been designed when in the first place, it doesn't tag things correctly. And actually it's more work to try and unpick the auto tagging than it is just to start from fresh. So it depends on the size of your document, how well it was designed in the first place, and kind of how good a job auto tagging does. But it's important to know that you can do that. But don't rely on it and think, oh, I'll just auto tag and then I'm done. Because unfortunately, yeah, it is prone to errors and it's not particularly reliable in that sense. But if you are very new and you're kind of starting off blank with no tags, sometimes auto tagging will get you kind of halfway there, which is helpful. So that's your basics. Let's have a look at some issues together. So we've talked about heading tags. Headings are very important for screen readers. I'm sure anyone who's done any accessibility webinars before has heard that lots and lots of times. The heading text, of course, needs to be meaningful, and hopefully the document's been designed in a way that works. We're not worried about the content really at this point. We're just worried about how it's been tagged. So the levels of heading are quite important. So of course, headings, and Adobe Acrobat use a word called nesting. And they say headings should be nested correctly. And that basically is something we're probably familiar with in the accessibility space, in that we shouldn't be skipping heading levels. A document should only really have one heading level, one H1 tag in this case. And that should be your main title. And then obviously your subheading should follow on from that. If you're checking accessibility and you run the accessibility checker and it says nested headings error, 9 times out of 10, that means it thinks there's an irregular order to those headings. So maybe it thinks you've skipped one, or that you've put a heading 4 before a heading 3, which doesn't make sense in the order. So just go through your heading tags and make sure they are in logical order and that they make sense. That's the most likely reason for that error. And the simple way to fix it is to make sure they're in logical order. I would say heading tags are one of the things that we get right most of the time because we're familiar doing it in other contexts. Doing it in a PDF is no different, really. Of course, linking to that is logical reading order. And as we've said, that's really, really important in a PDF. So logical reading order in a PDF refers to kind of the sequence in which the content is read and interpreted by assistive technology. So ensuring that your reading order is correct is essential for PDF accessibility. And of course, it's logical reading order. So that's very much determined by you and by the content in that document. So you can decide what order that needs to be in. So remember, anything that doesn't have a tag will be missed. But the good thing about your reading order tree is that you can drag and drop content as you wish. So you can also use your keyboard to move things around if that's how you prefer to navigate. So it's very flexible. So even if it's been designed in a particular way, you can amend the reading order to read it in a completely different way if that's what's needed. So I always say to people, it's part of the accessibility check, but it's a manual check because Adobe can't determine what logical is in that circumstance, as it can't in any other context either. So it's up to you to ensure that you've done that correctly. We will look at reading order and what that means a little bit later on. Linked to reading order, but slightly separate, are something called bookmarks. So we might all be familiar with bookmarks in a physical reading book, for example. We put it in to know where we've stopped and where we want to start again next time. Bookmarks in a PDF document are sort of similar, but they're more about allowing people to navigate to specific sections of your document quite easily. So I always like to think of bookmarks as my table of contents, really. Or it's a navigation menu that helps users or readers quickly jump to areas of interest. So they don't have to scroll or search manually. They can just select the heading that works for them and read that section. I would say they're especially useful in like long, complex PDF documents, but they are great for just improving overall accessibility and user experience. So for users who aren't using screen readers, bookmarks can help them navigate quite quickly. They can also kind of get a bit of an overview of the document as well by using bookmarks. In Adobe Acrobat Pro, you can create bookmarks by, there is a whole bookmark panel, which is normally somewhere near the top of your tools bar. If you select the bookmarked option, you can see what bookmarks are in your document. So it will list them out in a list. You can then navigate through that list and kind of understand what bookmarks have been added. If there are any missing or any you don't agree with, you can just select a bookmark and delete it. There is a bin icon at the top of the bookmarks panel, so you can just delete that if you want to. If you want to add any bookmarks, I would say the best way, there's two ways you can do it. The first way is you can navigate to the page you want to add the bookmark. And once you've got that page on your screen, you can go to your bookmarks panel and just say add bookmark, and then it will add that bookmark to the panel for you. It will add it directly underneath, so it will just add it as your kind of the latest one, the bottom of the list. You can then drag and drop these bookmarks in any order that you want. So you can add them all and then order them later. That's absolutely fine. The other way you can add a bookmark is, say, for example, if it was a heading that you wanted to bookmark, you could select the text like you were if you were changing the font size or color in Word, for example, and then click add bookmark. And again, it will add it to the bottom of the list for you. So bookmarks can be linked to specific pages. They can be linked to specific headings. And they can be even linked to specific positions on a page. I would be a little bit wary about the position on a page because sometimes the orientation then for the user can get a little bit confusing. Linking them to specific pages and or headings is probably the best way to use a bookmark, but it's important to be aware that there are other ways you can also use bookmarks just to... Again, they're all added in exactly the same way. If you're going to add it to bookmark to a specific passage of text, you just select the text and then add a bookmark in your bookmarks panel. Bookmarks are really important for accessibility though, so make sure they're added in. List tags. I said I'd come back to this. So a list is simply a container with items inside it. And each item has two parts, the bullet and the text. And it is just as simple as that, but it always sounds and looks from a tagging perspective so much more complex than it needs to be. So just, I always think of it as a box, okay? My box is my L tag, it's my list. That's the outside, that's why I've got everything inside. And then inside my box is a slightly smaller box, and that's called my list item. And then inside that box, a bit like Russian dolls, I suppose, are two little boxes. One says LBL, which stands for label, and one says L body, which stands for list body, which is my text. So most lists, if they've been structured correctly, will have a bullet of some kind, whatever shape or icon that might be, and text that accompanies it. That's the standard way to structure a list. So you need to add a tag for the bullet and a tag for the text for that bullet. So each list item will have two items. It will have the label and the actual text of that bullet. So this should be structured in a way where at the top you have your L, that's your list tag. That's kind of, in Adobe language, they call it parent and child. So your parent is your list. And then within that, they have a list, their oldest child, which is their list item. And then two younger children, their label and their L body. I don't mind whichever way helps you remember this, whether it's the box analogy or the parent and child relationship. It doesn't matter as long as you understand the structure of a list. You'll see a pattern where a lot of tagging is kind of tags within tags to kind of build up a tree. That's kind of how they work, to give it proper structure. And once you've kind of understood how each item is structured, you kind of get to grips with it because it's very, very repetitive. But it's getting your sort of head around what each one means to begin with that can be a little bit tricky. But that is quite simply how you kind of structure a list in a PDF document. I suppose in a more simple way, it's alt text for images and figures. So again, of course, you need to make sure you've got alternative text on figures in a PDF. So every image will need a figure tag, and every figure tag should have alternative text. There are various ways to add that. If your image has not been tagged already, you will need to go and make sure it has got a tag, of course. Once you've tagged your image, you can select properties. And then under the tag tab, there is an alternative text field, and you would type in there whatever it is you would normally type in there as if you were doing it inside a Word document or something similar. You can also fix it directly via the accessibility checker tool in Adobe, so it will flag. There's obviously not alternative text, and it will, if you click on it, you can then select and type in your alternative text in a very similar way. I would say don't let it get to that stage and just check every figure tag has some kind of alternative text by going into the properties of that tag and looking at the alternative text field. There are artifact tags. So artifact content is ignored. So marking elements of the document as artifacts means that those elements will be completely ignored by screen readers. The purpose of doing that, I guess, is to exclude kind of like non-essential or decorative content that by and large doesn't contribute to the overall meaning or structure of the document. I tend to use that very sparingly because I don't really think much of my document is decorative at PDF stage. Most of it's in there for a reason and I want it tagged. But it's important to know that that does exist as a concept if you don't want to tag anything, you don't want to leave it empty. Artifacting content can help improve kind of reading experience, of course, because it reduces like the amount of cognitive load in there. It also ensures that only that relevant and meaningful content is announced. I would say using artifacts in kind of tagging is not always the best thing to do because you want to make sure that most things have been tagged and will be communicated to all users. I always make sure if I've got any like NTP tags, so you can open up a tag and see what's inside of it by literally by selecting in your tag tree. If there is no content in there, I just get rid of the empty one. They're probably just spaces in there that have been converted across that you don't need. Sometimes you can artifact like headers and footers if they're there, or page numbers if you don't want those included. They're good examples of where art that, you know, marking things as an artifact is helpful. But again, that's probably one of the only things you can, you would, only times you might use artifacting in a way that I think work well. Okay. Table tags are a little bit more complicated, but they really do, for anyone who is familiar with HTML code, there's a real strong resemblance here to HTML code. It's very, very similar to kind of the list tag structure, but there are four different tags for tables, whereas there were, actually there's four different tags for lists, I suppose, as well. But basically, if we're going to use the box analogy again, our table, we've got a big box and that's our table box. So all other tags must be nested within our tables. They all have to sit inside our table box. That's our top one. So that's our table tag. Inside that are our TR, or our table row tags. So each row of my table needs a TR tag, which is a table row tag. And then inside that one, there are two different tags I can use. I can use TH or TD. TH is table header. TD is table data. So it will depend on what's most appropriate. So if I'm thinking of a normal table that you might have, so the top row of your table is your header, and then after that are all just data rows, one after the other. So a very, very simple structure for that might be table tag at the top, table row underneath, and then say it's got three columns. I would have three different table header tags that each respond to each one of those columns. My next row down, maybe the first column is also a table header, potentially. So I can mark that as a TH, and then the following columns are then not as TDs because they're just table data, they're not header cells. And then it is basically, is depending on how many rows you've got, you repeat that same pattern over and over again. Table data cells are normally just the main content in your tables. And that's kind of a way to differentiate the two. But again, if you run an accessibility check and you get any error, it might be that you've not put your table row tags in there underneath your table. It might be that you've got too many table header cells for kind of what would be logical. So normally you might have your top table row as your header, and then, as we say, one for each column, maybe on the first column of your table. But after that, everything else should be marked as a table data cell. It sounds more complex potentially than it is, but if you were to look at or use a normal table and replace on or right next to it what you think each tag would be, you can kind of see how this is a kind of a normal structured table. It just makes it sound more complex when you've got kind of the tagging and the symbols next to each one. But if you follow a simple structure, you can make sure a table is accessible. This is why we also say to people not to merge cells, split cells, create like an irregular structure in a table, because then tagging it becomes a bit of a nightmare and it's very, very difficult to tag that in an accessible way. So that's why we like tables that have a nice, simple, easy structure to follow, because tagging it then becomes a lot easier. And then one of the final things I'll share is tagging links. So multi-line links often present, if you have got any multi-line links, often present a bit of a unique challenge. If you have got any multi-line links, I would say it can be quite beneficial to delete any like tagging that's already there and basically just start again. And make sure you just tag the entire link altogether. Because sometimes if you've got multi-line links, so what I mean by that is a link that spans across multiple lines in your document, long, hopefully it's not, because that's not particularly accessible, but it could be. I would normally just select the entire link and put it under one tag rather than having it broken down, because it's a bit disjointed otherwise. The way you tag a link is you would select the text that you want to tag. You would right select or go into your options menu, and there'll be a create link option somewhere near the bottom of that menu. And then you make sure you understand where that link is. You might put your URL in, or you tell the PDF software where that link's going to take somebody. And then it will automatically tag that link for you. Quite an important component of accessible links in PDFs is the addition of alternate text. It's not essential, but it can be helpful. It can provide additional context for the link. So, of course, we were aware of alternate text for images and in other contexts, but we've probably not heard of it for links before. But screen readers often read visible link text, but replacing the screen text with something meaningful and alternative text can make it a little bit more accessible, really. It's not essential, but it can be helpful. So when the link tag has like a blank alt entry, screen readers will ignore the value of any visible text objects and use the alt entry. So it's important to make sure that you put something in that box so that there's some context there for screen reader users. Again, that's in the properties. So when you're adding, when you've added your link tag already and you've got that all set up, if you select your link tag and go to the properties, you'll see the alt text box option there. Again, it's a slight difference with PDF software that you wouldn't do in other format types when it comes to documents. Now we're nearing kind of the end, so I'll end with some tips about checking PDF accessibility and how you can kind of do that in a way that works. So inspect the tags tree. On the slide, I've got a small dog wearing kind of round glasses and a hoodie, looking as if they're typing on a laptop. Normally what I do when I check in a PDF accessibility, I'll open up my tags pane and I basically what I call walk the tag tree. So I often use a keyboard and I use my arrow keys and I go from the top of the document and I simply press the down arrow and go through my tags pane. And what I'm really doing there is making sure the structure is correct. So I'm checking that everything has a tag. The tag it's been assigned is correct for the content in the document, and that it's in an order that makes sense. I'm not jumping around from place to place around my document. If those three things are there, then I'm happy that at least my tagging looks to be relatively accurate and logical for what I need it to be. So that's the first thing I would do. Obviously, I would use the accessibility checker. I know at the start, I kind of gave it a little bit of a bad name. And that's just because I don't like it being used as the one-stop check and that's it. I like to say that it's one step in kind of remediating and checking PDF accessibility. Of course, it has its place 100%. One thing to say is that when you select running an accessibility check and it says full check, there's only a checkbox that comes up and it says checking, and then it will give you a number of 32 issues. Just make sure you're checking 32 of 32, because that basically means you're checking everything in the document. Sometimes like 5 of 32 will be there, and that means you're only checking 5 of the full 32 it can do, and that's just a waste of time. So you might as well check absolutely everything. What I do like about the checker is that it will often then bring up your issues, and then it will offer you the opportunity to basically select the issue directly and go to that point in the document to fix it. So you can pretty much do it. Go through the fixes there and then, which is quite handy, especially with things like adding alternative text. It's really handy for doing that. So again, I would do that when it comes to running an accessibility checker. It will look for like proper semantic structure. It will look for alternative text for your figures. It will look for metadata. So it will look for your document title and your file name. And it will also look to make sure that the language selection is correct, as well as like other accessibility checkpoints. So it definitely checks quite a bit, but it will never replace kind of doing a manual check of the tags tree as well. So I did touch on earlier, but like the nested elements, I think this is the one that I hear the most from colleagues who are kind of trying to work in this space and do some PDF work. They just keep saying it just says nested, but I don't know what that means. Pretty much that nested word gets thrown at pretty much any error in a PDF document. And what the most of the time is that the tagging structure starts you off, which is why I always start with a manual walk of the tags tree, because I can pick up a lot just from having a manual walk through it. But nested often means that the structure of the tags is maybe just that, yeah, a line. So if you get that error under whatever heading, so this one The screenshot on this slide is from Tanhu text file, but it could be for headings, it could be for anything. There'll be underneath where the error comes up, it will say how many there are. So in this example, it says element one. So luckily, I've only got one issue, but it could say element 25. There could be quite a few on the list. So I click on the first one, or select the first one in the list. Once I've right selected it, I'll see an option that says show in text pane. I select that option. Then it will take me to where that is in the tags tree. So it'll take me directly there. So I haven't got to find it. It will automatically show me where that is and it will highlight it for me. So in this instance, there was a figure tag within another figure tag, which that's not an accessible best practice. So I can't have two figure tags embedded within one another. That doesn't work. So quite simply, I just have to move that figure tag from sitting outside that, so it just sits directly underneath it rather than being nested underneath it. So I move it out. Actually, I also realized that tag is empty. It has no information in it, so I'm just going to delete it. Once I've deleted that tag, and if I was to rerun the check, that error should disappear. It was basically just telling me that's not normal. You don't normally nest one figure tag inside another. There's a problem here. Can you go and fix it? I've done that and it's checked. So just double check. If you're getting nested problems, check the logical order because there might be something out there. We've already talked a little bit about the issues with the checker. I've got a brown dog here putting a bit of a silly face as if he's a bit disappointed, but there are obviously limitations with it. As with all checkers, you know, it can't check accuracy of alt text. So remember that. And it will overlook things like hyperlink issues as well. But I won't drill on. We know that we need to do our own checks with it. If you do want to go one step further, I unfortunately can't do this because I'm on an Apple Mac laptop. But if you are on Windows, there is a pack. It's called PDF Accessibility Checker. It's free to download for Windows users. You can test your PDF through that. I actually prefer to do that if I have the opportunity because it's just like another automated check that picks up a few more issues. So I like to run pack from my PDFs if I can. So it's an option for anyone who can do that. Some top tips, just take it from someone who's done many, many, many hours of PDF remediation over time. Acrobat is prone to crashing, as I'm sure lots of other software are. So just save your work frequently. There's also a dog on this slide with a headset and microphone looking like they're working from home, which is quite funny. Acrobat's undo function is quite limited, so save a copy of your work quite frequently. Sometimes when you're deep into kind of remediation, you're moving things around. Yeah, you can't undo things that easily, so just make sure you save. And if your document has any kind of like visual accessibility errors, by that I mean like color contrast problems or like graphs and images that have not been pulled through correctly, you can't amend those in Acrobat, so go back and get it right in the original before you start any PDF work. Take it from someone who's had to do lots of things again because they've not saved or she can't undo what she's done. So final things for you, don't take anything else away from today. Check your reading order pane, rerun the accessibility checker, and check everything with a screen reader if you can, because of course that's going to give you the best idea as to how accessible your PDF is. If you are interested in kind of document accessibility and you want to know more about this, you want to ask questions, there is a group on LinkedIn. It's called the International Document Accessibility Group. It's an extension of our public sector one in the UK, but it's open to everybody. It doesn't matter who you are, what your job is. If you want to know more about document accessibility, feel free to join. I can put links in the chat. There's no cost. It's just a place for people to share best practice, very much like we're doing today. So feel free to join that if you're interested. Apologies, there's a lot less time for questions than I had envisaged, but hopefully that information was helpful. But I will take any questions in the last few minutes.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much. This has been a great presentation. I will also note this is one of the first times that I've heard someone really highlight bookmarks as being important for accessibility. I'm going to run through the questions that everyone has. So make sure if you have any, put them in the Q&A and we'll see how many we can get through in a few minutes. Can we go a couple minutes over, Samantha?
Yeah.
Okay. But I was curious on the bookmark side, is that wired for PDF UA compliance or is it just a best practice? And do you recommend them even on like a one-page document?
So I wouldn't say for one page document they're necessarily required. They're very much a nice to have. And in terms of PDF UA, it's interesting. So we don't work to PDF UA. So, but yes, they are actually a mandatory requirement for PDF UA. So
yeah, you need to add them in wherever you can.
Okay. Normally they'll be pulled through if you have heading tags and things. They'll automatically be populated, but it's worth checking they're populated correctly, of course.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. I'm going to try and go through these. I'm going to look at things that have upvotes. So if anyone wants me to pay attention to questions in particular, just because we don't have a ton of time, go upvote them if you're able. So we were wondering, can we get a copy of the slides?
Absolutely.
Would you be able to send that we can include with the recap?
Yep.
Perfect. Okay. So Jennifer wanted just some clarifications. If you make a source doc accessible and then print it to PDF, it won't make the PDF accessible, correct? You still need to remediate the resulting PDF?
Correct.
Okay. Some of these might just be fast, so we'll get through much. Let's see. And I think that answered the same question that Nick had that a few people voted on, which is if you convert a Word doc to PDF, you still need to go in and make changes and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just look, so don't print a PDF, of course, that's a bad thing to do. If you've saved it as a PDF, that's the way to convert it. A lot of it will have carried over. I'm not saying you have to start from scratch. It's not the end of the world, but a lot of people say, oh, it's all right. I've converted it from Word, so it's good to go. We can't guarantee that. So you always have to make a check.
Okay. Do you happen to know if someone is creating documents with pages? Do you have any experience with that? Like how that works? Does that give you an okay or similar setup like using Microsoft Word would?
Yeah, I think so. I think doing it from program, but like I've worked in other programs where it's been fine, but kind of the same rule applies in that as long as you know you've designed a pretty good source doc, whatever that source doc might be, other than a PowerPoint presentation. Yeah, your PDF is pretty good, but always left. Check in that it's got time supplied.
Okay. So I know a few people touched on maybe some other tools in the chat, so I would recommend going there. Denise had said, what if Adobe Acrobat Pro is too expensive for our council? Which is hard. Have you ever been in a situation where you've had to like justify paying for the license of a tool, or do you have any recommendations for that?
Great questions. Yeah, I basically do my research. I do like a mini discovery and I look at all the tools out there. I look at all that's available and I look at what I want to do in them and how much work I've got to do. And then I just basically judge on the best tool that's available and put that to my procurement team. I mean, we've had Adobe for quite a while now. It's kind of an established thing, but Appreciate is, yeah, it's not a cheap tool. So as I said, there are other tools out there that you can use. Some are free web-based ones. Other do require like a minimal fee that's maybe a little bit cheaper, but it's worth just doing a little bit of research and then making sure that when you make the case for whatever you decide that you kind of base that on strong evidence because you've assessed what's out there would be my piece of advice. But I know everyone's different. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There is a question, which I think is pretty quick. As far as headings, do the same rules like on the web apply, meaning you should only have one H1 per document?
Yeah. 100%.
Okay. And then also on the topic of headings, Nick had asked, do H5 and H6 exist in this context? Mm-hmm. They also asked about UL, like unordered lists versus numbered lists. Is there anything different in the tagging of those?
No. So your numbered, for example, would be your label. So label could be anything. So in the example I gave, it was my bullet, but my bullet could be a number. It could be A, B, C. It could be whatever it is you've got there. And the first thing about, yes, you can have headings 5 and 6. So you can call your tags whatever you want. You just change the number. Of course, things like that get a bit complex, but you can absolutely have them. They exist. So they should be tagged as well.
Okay. Yeah. So basically that's why you have the label tag in list items where it's saying this is what my label is, and it could either be not an emoji but like a character, right? Like an ASCII character or something, I guess.
Yeah,
or an actual number.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It could be whatever your label for your list item is. That's essentially what it is. So yeah.
Okay. Someone wanted to know, how do you set the logical order for multiple column content?
That's interesting. So I would just say whatever way you want to read it. So normally for multiple columns, it would be top to bottom of the first one and then top to bottom for the second one. So you would just set it in that order. So making sure when you kind of tab through that you're tabbing through in that order. I mean, it depends which way you want to read it. If you're reading it across the page, that is interesting. So I would say just reading each column down would probably be the most logical way. So just make sure that your order affects that in terms of the way that it's displayed. But yeah, that's an interesting one.
Okay. How about headers and footers? And I know you touched on this briefly when you were talking about making things artifact. I was interested because you were saying maybe page numbers are an artifact. And I was thinking, isn't that useful for people that know page numbers? But then it was occurring to me that they might get the page number anyway from the screen reader, so they don't need it. Yeah. So can you talk a little more about headers and footers and how you would know whether you should artifact content or not in those areas?
Yeah, so you're right about page numbers. That's exactly why I suggested that. For headers and footers, it's obviously context dependent on what they say. So we tend to avoid, I try and tell people to avoid headers and footers wherever they can. Because if it's important, put it in the actual body copy of your document and then you don't need a header or a footer. So normally in our document, if one exists, it's things that are repetitive or it just says Ministry of Justice or something that is irrelevant. It's just there because someone wanted to put it there. So in that case, I would artifact that content. But footers are an interesting one because footers normally include things like footnotes, which of course you would want to tag. There's a footnote tag for anyone who's interested that exists. So again, you would need to do that slightly differently. Now, I won't get into footnote tagging at this point in the webinar because we won't go there, but normally they're links and things like that, so they have to be structured slightly differently. But I would say just assess the content in the header or footer. If it's repetitive, maybe keep it on the first page and then artifact it from then on. Whatever you think is most appropriate, but it doesn't need to be repetitive on every single page.
Good to know. Thank you. S asks, will the tab key also work on PDFs to navigate from one active link to the next? Like you use on a web page.
Yes.
Okay. And I think we've already answered about numbered list. Hold on, let me just look through. Are document subject or keywords valuable to people using assistive tech, or is that just meta information in the other things that exist in the document properties panel?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it's subjective. I think it's metadata personally. I'm not a screen user myself, so I'm not going to talk for that audience. But as far as I know, some people that I've worked and tested with before, the document sort of title and file name are the most important things, and everything else is a sort of bonus. So I wouldn't spend too much time adding it in unless you need to for your sort of organizational policies when it comes to metadata and things.
Mm-hmm. Do you know of any tools that I'm kind of riffing on? Bjorn asked a question about if the source is an accessible HTML document, can we save that as an accessible PDF? And I know we've talked about this internally because, of course, I think the answer is if you're just using the browser, save as PDF is probably not going to be tagged at all, would be my guess. Do you know of any tools that allow you to or that automatically can convert HTML pages into accessible PDFs?
No, mainly because I don't work with those kind of things, but it doesn't mean they don't exist. I'd test a few. I'm sure they probably do exist. It feels like something that, yeah, is quite like kind of basic in some respects, I would say. But yeah, I think you're right in terms of printing a web page to PDF is basically like sending a Word page to PDF. Is printing it to PDF, sorry, it's not going to be accessible. But there might be ways you can do it. So sorry, I don't have any recommendations, but it's a great question.
Yeah. Let me see. Francois asked, should you use a screen reader to test the resulting PDF, or is that something you do?
Yeah, I do that. I will do everything I said, run it through pack if I can, and then test with the screen reader as my last thing, because it just gives me that final seal of approval and I feel then satisfied to send that out in the world. But that's just me being a little bit of a perfectionist as well, but I do think it's good practice.
Yeah, I agree. I will also say, I don't know if you've had this experience, but the keyboard shortcuts when you're using Adobe are different from on the web. And so there's definitely a learning curve to figure out how to get a screen reader to read a document to you in Adobe.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it doesn't help when I try to test with three different screen readers just to give a kind of as best a kind of overall compliance as I can, which then again does things. But once you've got the hang of it and you've done it a few times, you kind of know what you're doing. So it's worth learning the first to then forever.
Okay, we are almost at 10 minutes over, which is when I'm going to stop. But let's see real quick. Do you know if InDesign is pretty good at tagging when exporting to PDF?
Yeah, the Adobe family are pretty good to keep themselves in check. So yeah, most things that are designed, again, obviously 100% just depends on the original design as with all these things. But if it's been designed correctly to start with, then the results of PDF, again, is pretty good. Again, not perfect, check it, but it's probably better than a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Do you know any workarounds regarding optimization plugins that strip PDFs from their structural metadata, including accessibility on upload?
I do not. That sounds like an issue, though, that I would not want to
defend. Yeah. I would say if you're using something like WP Smush or one of those WordPress plugins that try to optimize all of your uploads, usually you can exclude certain file extensions. So I would by default just exclude all PDFs from like minification or smushing or trying to make the file size smaller, because I feel like that's when they're going to strip it all out. We're at 10 minutes after. I so much appreciate you being willing to stay extra. And there are a few questions that we probably don't have time to dig into. So where would be the best place if someone wanted to follow up with you? Is there a social media platform you're on more?
Yes, I'm on LinkedIn. So yeah, I'm just Samantha Merritt on LinkedIn. So feel free to come find me. I will absolutely answer any questions anyone's got. Always happy to connect with others. So feel free. Please do.
Well, thank you so much again, Samantha. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Our goal this week is to get this recording out this same week. So hopefully you'll have that soon, and we'll make sure that we include a link to the slides as well.
Yeah, lovely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you found this episode valuable, please help us reach more people by subscribing, reviewing or liking the show, and sharing this with your colleagues. Accessibility Craft is a production of Equalize Digital, Inc. Steve Jones composed our theme music. To learn how Equalize Digital can support you on your accessibility journey, visit us at equalizedigital.com.